Hi, I'm Michael Ball, and you're listening to the Toffee Blues podcast.
Welcome to a special edition of the Toffee Blues podcast. My name's David. If you do know me, I'm sorry, but do get comfy because you won't want to miss this one. This week I spoke to a genuine Evertonian, a local lad who walked a path that most of us could only dream about. He made 121 appearances for the club that he loves, and it really was a privilege to speak to him. It was, of course, the one and only Michael Ball.
So yeah, once again, firstly, thanks for just taking your time out to speak to us at the Toffee Blues. Certainly from a personal point of view, it's kind of a big deal for me because I started going the game around 97, which is, of course, when you broke into the team. So you were one of my idols when I was a young lad. Funny enough, I was thinking about this when I was doing a bit of research before our chat. There was an occasion where when I was a younger lad, my dad used to take me and we had to kind of fluctuate between the top balcony and the family enclosure just so I could see what was going on. I always preferred the family enclosure just to be a little bit closer to the pitch and the players, and I always hoped I might get a grab of the ball. And there was this one time where it smacked the advertising board in front of us. And my dad quickly scooped it up and handed it over to me. I froze, of course, and it was yourself who was hurtling towards me. And we were losing at the time as well. I've ended up just throwing the ball about 20 yards away from you. And I just remember the whole ground booing and groaning. I think I was only about six, and I was having nightmares about it for weeks. But anyway, as we know, it was a great career you had. Played for the likes of Rangers, PSV, City, but of course it all started with Everton. So just where did your love first start with the club, and how did you end up signing for them?
Well, the love of the club was basically from my family. My dad got a huge family, and since I was able to get out the house and watch the game, I think he used to take me when I was 3-4 years old. So I always had the games with my dad, and similar to yourself, it was family enclosure, then I'd be in the main stand and I'd be up and down. So I loved the club from basically day dot, really, and then just obviously just go to the game with the family and just support the Blues. And obviously I was spoiled as a child because we were successful back then, and you know, I've seen some good memories and some very memorable games that we still talk about now. So it was very easy, you know. The club close to my heart, and playing football was all as a kid, like everybody really, just loved playing football. Loved every time I went anywhere, I always had a ball with me, and just obviously playing for my local club, and seemed to be like standing out more than others, and got an opportunity to go to the other side of the park to play with the academy, because my local team, it was Hugh McCauley, who's a coach at Liverpool, asked me to go and train with them for a bit, and you know, which was great, getting good coaching off him and Stevie Iway. But he always made sure I only had me Everton kit or my England kit, so that's, you know, they took a bit good stick. They used to give me a lot of stick, but I think they loved me loyalty, that I, you know, I wasn't going to be swayed by putting that red top on, or so we always used to train with the Everton top on, and then there'd be a bib or something to try and hide it.
I do love that, to be fair.
So it was good times, and there's always a memory that when I was at Melwood at Easter, and they're all having dinner, and I got invited to go and train for a couple of days with the youth team, and you know, you're only say 12, 13 years of age, and John Barnes was in the canteen throwing peas at me, and thinking, you know, I've rattled them already, so it was quite fun. But luckily enough, they all gave me father a phone call and said Howard Kendall wants to meet you, and that was just like a dream come true. You know, Liverpool tried their best to keep me. You know, Steve Dyer was us. You know, he was a top man and a top coach, and he tried to get Fowler in, McManaman and Mindy and Rush, to persuade me to say, look, you can still support Everton, play for this club. I'm going, no, you don't realise it. I can't do that.
Yeah.
And Graeme Souness, the manager at the time, he sat me down and said, well, Michael, you know, follow your heart, but you're English, I'm Scottish. I'm Liverpool, you're Everton. I don't think it could work out.
Yeah.
And, you know, had a bit of a chuckle, and he just said, follow your heart, which was nice for them,
definitely.
You know, but then I was never going to turn down an opportunity to go and meet Howard Kendall, and He asked for me mum and dad to come for a lunch, and I was panicking because all I've got is footy kit. You know, I didn't have any clothes, I didn't have a suit or anything. So what do you do? Ties. You know, it's stupid things that you don't think about. And went to a restaurant in Formby, Tea Chops at the time. And I've only got a small memory of it really, like before and after, because I wasn't allowed in the meal. I was having a sort of restarted, and as a kid, you know, you go into these fancy restaurants, you don't know what you're eating. You sort of get to the plainest thing possible. And then Howard basically said, "So do you want to play for our club then?" I was like, "Yes, of course." So that was it, done.
So how old were you at this time?
I was 13. I was 13 then, and that was sort of, I got asked to go to the other side of the restaurant and help myself to the minibar. But it was only Coke, obviously. But, you know, I was too scared to even, or cheeky enough to even take one. So I just sat there for about 2 hours, and probably more on my own, while my mum and dad are having a nice drink. And my dad's probably telling Howard what team he should play. And,
telling him how to do the job.
That was all fun and games, and my mum was a little bit word for word afterwards. And I just remember going, "What's going on? You know, have I signed?" And, you know, also, near the end, you got to have to come back in and sign the schoolboy form. So that was when my dream was then, it was done. So I don't really know what happened to 2 hours, what my mum and dad were saying, but we still talk about the day, one of the memorable days, and that was where we sort of, where it started getting serious, really, you know, as a kid. And then I was off to Lillishall then for 2 years, so I wasn't really part of the footy club. But you stay in Lillishall, where there was Michael Owen, Wes Brown, you know, and a few others, John Harley, who sort of made it a career. So I didn't actually start at the club properly. You come back at Easthead and school holidays and play games for the A team and the B team and stuff like that. But I didn't actually start till obviously the YTS after school.
Yeah.
And then that was sort of the serious part of it, where you're in the man's world type thing after school, and you've got to sort of earn your right to, you know, to basically to make your debut, really, at first. But you've got to sort of gel with a lot of lads that I've never known, for 2 years, 3 years, to sort of coming from sort of the outside and fight for your place. So I was always sort of determined to do what I could to get into the team. And John Hurst and Ronnie Goodless were the coaches back then, but I didn't really stay with the youth team for long.
I was probably
around about the 3 months. As soon as I turned 17 in the October, obviously pre-season starts, say, July-ish, something like that. And by the October, I was 17. Jimmy Gabriel was really good to me. He just put me straight through the reserves. But it wasn't a big reserve team at the time. There was only like probably a handful of 6 or 7 lads, and then that would get filled with ex-players. The players that hadn't been involved in the games at the weekend.
Of course.
And it was a good, I spoke about it recently. You look back at the reserve team, but sometimes there was Conchelsky there, there'd be Grant, there'd be Parkinson, there'd be Paul Rybelt, Mark Hattiger, should mention there was quite a few, big name players. So obviously that was the way it was back then. If you didn't play it on the Saturday, you'd have to keep your match sharpness up. So Vinny Stanways was there, you learned a lot, very quick. You know, being involved with them in training, they were so quick and so ahead of you. But I was just so determined to sort of, stamp me on authority somehow. And I found out, if I can't match them at this, I'll try and get me defended and make sure no one really can get past me. And in a strange way, that's sort of how my debut sort of happened. I just remember going through 11v11, and I was obviously 1v1 with Konchelskis, and I didn't realise, I just got sheltered over on the other side of the park to come in and join in and make the numbers up, and Konchelskis didn't get past me, but I didn't realise it was just trying to walk through it. But I was taking it serious.
And letting them know you were there.
So Konchelskis wasn't a bit too happy with me. But Joe Royal just sheltered and goes, "Michael, we just let him pass because we're playing, I can't remember who they were playing, Man United or whoever." They just want to, I was like, "All right, okay." And then after that, I just seemed to be in part of the first team training quite a lot and travelling with the first teams. Joe was always one of them who wanted me to travel the away games and make the teas and coffees and just be around the first team, so you're not sort of starstruck, which, even though I was a mad blue, there's some players you're just always going to be starstruck on, even though they are your teammates. So there'll be Big Nev there, and the laughs you're having, there's a YTF going into the rooms and there's a big Nev and, you know, two Parkinson and Andy just giving each other stick. He just sat there like a proper schoolboy, just laughing your head off and just hoped that you never got an eyeline of Nev. But as soon as you clocked it, you got your nickname and that was you stuck. So I got called quite a few on them from the big man, whether there's Bugsy Burrows or what else, like the German, whatever come out of his mouth in the morning, that stuck for a good week or so.
What was the, when you did come in, it was, I believe the debut was against Spurs, wasn't it, 97? Was it Watson who gave you your first debut?
It was. It was like it just felt, I don't know, like when you're a kid, you sort of tick a little bucket list off and like, I've just done that. You don't make a list up, you just go, well, I've done that. Now what can I do now? You know, got into the reserve team, now we're getting into the squad. Now I just want to get on the pitch. And it just seemed like with Joe, who we seem to be on the travelling, being on the bench or being just outside the squad. And I sort of, not lost a fight of obviously getting on the pitch, but I just thought, when's it going to happen? And it's because of being in the team and the squad for that long, it never seemed to sort of, take a chance. And obviously with the swap of Jogo, and I thought, well, you know, Dave's going to obviously bring in the older guys and just try and get a bit of experience in while we were struggling. And but luckily enough, like a bit of fate, there was an injury that happened just before half time, and Dave Watson, you know, showed a lot of faith and bringing me on just before half time. And it was just a goal kick. I went up for the heading and the half time whistle went. So then I had sort of time to sort of get my head around what I needed to do, and at half time, and Dave Watson just pulled me to one side and he goes, look, you've got the quality, son, and just do what you've been doing, and you know what this crowd's all about. And you know, sometimes a tackle, you know, if you can't score a goal, a tackle will get the crowd going and get us right behind. So you know, go out, enjoy it and do what you can. And you know, weirdly enough, you know, through my career I was probably known as sort of a strong tackler, but I never really got booked even as a young kid. But I think I was on the pitch for about 5 minutes and I got booked, thinking I was Rocky against Varga. You know, we were trying to shoot the ball out of play and we got this little skinny blonde scouse lad trying to get round him. So I just wanted to go to show him, look, you know, you're not going to have an easy game. So I think I tackled him from behind and they definitely give me the deserved yellow card, and the crowd gave me a bit of a cheer. So that was like, well, yeah, Waggy was right. But then it was just it was a great moment, and it was a big win at the time. It was 1-0. So it was a very important win. And it's only sort of now thinking back how important it really was at the time. I'm sort of, I couldn't say I was selfish, but I'm just made my debut, and I've made up, like, I've done my dream that I've always wanted to do, and put that blue shirt on and run out, you know, Goodison Park. So then, and then obviously to win, it's always great, but it's only when you think back how important that win was in that season.
Yeah, it was. Well, that, funny enough, I was going to ask you about that. Obviously, you did come in, really that kind of, those few months going into the following season, it was a difficult period for the club, wasn't it? Of course, Kendall come back. I mean, firstly, what was it like playing under Kendall? Bearing in mind, he was probably a hero of yours.
Yeah, it was a strange one, because you sort of, obviously I met him a few years before, and he signed me as a 14-year-old, but you know, you have to come in and get business done. So he's busy getting the players played the way he wanted to play. But him and Hinchcliffe and it does me, you know, they were a pain. You know, because they used to train. They trained with you, and they were too good. You know, you weren't allowed to tackle them. You weren't allowed to tackle them, which sometimes you wanted to, but you knew if you got a few studs on them, you won't be playing Saturday. So it's sort of you'd either have to sort of let him. I wouldn't say let him. He can make him look good, because he was good.
You
play one touch, two touch, and he was especially on a Friday before games. You have little fun little games, and he was head and shoulders on everyone. You know, even though. You know, he was old and he said you passed it, but he still had the brain, and he was, you know, he made training very enjoyable for the players.
Yeah.
You know, even though we were going through that bad time, he made us sort of have fun, you know, but be serious at the same time. And, you know, but I think the lads really enjoyed the training under Howard, and he was a good sort of player manager. You know, he knew who needed his arm around the shoulder, who needed, you know, a quiet word here and there. So he was very, very clever that way. And I just remember taking my boots off, I think that maybe after pre-season, he just sat on the wall by Belfield knocking all the mud off their boots, and he goes, I remember that day, three top three, and then he just walked off. And I thought, oh great, you know, because I was like, thank God, you know, that meant a lot. I didn't remember the day he signed me as a young kid. So I just, but I knew I had a fight on my hands to get, and it was Hinchcliffe sort of breaking the England team at the time. They had Terry Field and the Irish international. So I had a fight on my hands to sort of stamp me authority and try and get a run of games in the first team. And that was sort of after my debut. And I think it was a couple of weeks after my first start at West Ham that, you know, that's what I needed to try and do. You know, as a young kid, there's many clubs and there's many kids who are new. We're all getting the little babies here and there. But, you know, I was one of the first and the sure to do so. But I just wanted to get a run of games going. And that was my target.
Well, you did feature a lot in that season, but, I mean, you talk about the training, but how difficult was it, bearing in mind how close we did go to going down in 98 and staying up on the last day? What was it like for you and the lads on the pitch?
I look it back now and I go, how did we deal with it? You know, because at the time you don't think, well, again, I'm biased on a blue, I'm thinking we're never going to go down, we're too good to go down. I had that sort of mentality, but the season has probably came a couple of weeks before. I think we played Southampton, and I just remember the way it got mentioned in the changing room after one of the games, that we need to sort ourselves out, we're going to get relegated. That, you know, one of the senior players said that, and I remember looking at him thinking, nah, you know, I'm just not believing it, but that's probably being naive for me, really, because, you know, that reality, we were in a dire situation.
Yeah.
But because I'm in my first season and enjoying football and enjoying playing for the club, I'm not really seeing a bigger picture.
Yeah, of course.
And that game, I can't remember what happened the night before, but, you know, I think a lot of players would have been, you know, sleepless nights and thinking what needs to be happening, because it was out of our hands. And the only part of them with that game is I had got into a bad challenge, like by the main stand, and a stud went right into my knee. I was sort of not struggling, but the physio came around to Jones and he said, "You're coming off," and I just pushed him and probably told him to F off as well. And he slapped me across the face and I was sort of like in shock thinking, is he just slapped me across the face? And it was in front of like the family enclosure where it would have happened, and I was right by the dugout
watching it.
Yeah. So he said, well, give him a lefty as well. Wake him up. And I was by the tunnel, walking by the tunnel, and Howard looked at me and I think I was quite teary. And he goes, "What's up with you?" And I just basically said that he wants to take me off, and he goes, "You got over yet?" Yeah. He goes, "Get back on the pitch, then."
Did he?
So I was like, "Get in." So I just turned around and ran back on the pitch, and obviously we all know what happened after that.
Cool.
Marvin with the pen, that was like a nightmare situation. That was one of the times I thought, "Shall I step up?" You know, I was nowhere near being a penalty taker back then, but I'd done it for England, and I always thought, you know, if I get an opportunity. But Nick missed, and then the keeper dropped the ball or went through his hands, and you're just thinking, oh no. But we hold on, and you know, that was great, but I couldn't really enjoy the celebrations in the changing room, because one, my knee was sort of bleeding and I was on crutches, and the other half, Andy Jones and the club doctor, had me against the wall by my throat saying, you know, I could have let the club down. You know, you lost half a yard there, you could have slip, you could have done anything, you put the club at risk.
I thought it went a bit easy on you, to be honest, after the year.
I got put, basically because I got against him.
Yeah.
And the manager, you know, and he thinks his authority is being overruled, which it was. But it was just I'm only basically the one who cares. This is my club, not many in there, it's their club.
No, of course.
And I think they were just basically saying, look, apologise and move on. And we got away with it this time, but you'll listen to our advice in the future, which I can understand. But at the time, I've got an adrenaline. I probably would have played with two broken legs back then. So it didn't really matter what they were saying to me. I just didn't want to go off that pitch. And I think me being sort of a bit tearful, I think I was thinking, you know, very happy that he asked me the question so I could get back on the pitch and hope and see us through. So we were lucky. I went to Belfield the next day to get the tablets that I needed and get myself really assessed, and Howard was there, and Belfield was bouncing. It was, and then, but it was bouncing for the right reason, for relief, not celebrating us, you know, having a good season. It was just sort of like, we've got away with it there, you know, we had the luck. Now let's get down to work and focus on next season, get back fit. Yeah. And that's what was in the players' minds and the players' heads, to get back and don't let us get back in that situation ever again.
Yeah. Well, I mean, going on to that next season, obviously, that was when Walter Smith came in. I mean, what was he like as a manager?
Walter came in and he made a lot of changes.
Because it's looked back, isn't it, as a failure, really, as time there. But, I mean, Everton, off the pitch, were going through a difficult spell, weren't they, financially? And
It was a difficult time for Walter to come in, I suppose. But he made a lot of changes. You know, again, talking about Belfield, he didn't think Belfield was up to scratch. He was giving a bit of a lick of paint and making it more desirable inside, new Florida and stuff like that, and getting the gym sorted out. Which, because he wanted it to, you know, for us to enjoy being at the training ground and spend a lot more time at the training ground. And he came in, he did have a bit of money to spend. You know, and he did, to be fair to him, he spotted a good few players that, you know, attracted to the club, but it didn't last too long. And Walter, maybe fair, maybe a year, 18 months, was, he sort of, I wouldn't say I was his teacher's pet, but, you know, I was in his office for the right reasons.
Yeah.
a lot of the time, giving me advice and going, look, you know, we want you to break in the England team, we want you to do this, you need to do that, speak to the players.
Yeah.
So I was sort of being like a, not acting like a vice captain, but he was always putting me, giving me sort of leadership to go out and do, you know, look after the young kids. And, you know, he's dealt with young players at Rangers. He's had Barry Ferguson and you know, a few others have come through the system. So he knew what was ahead of me, and he just wanted me to sort of stick to the right path and do the right things. And at the time, I was sort of having a niggle with me knee. And it was, all through my career, I've done that. I never really learned from it, that I thought if I can play a game at a good level and I'm sort of getting man of the match or playing a good standard, you know, there's no point moaning to the doctor. You know, Les Elm at the time always said to me, Michael, you're never injured. So I'm not fast enough to pull a hammy anyway, so you don't worry about that. So, you know, we had a little joke over it, but then as soon as I got into the senior thing, I started getting this really sharp pain in my right standing knee when I used to sort of cross the ball or whip a few balls in. But I always thought, well, if I'm playing at a decent level in the Premier League, you know, it can't be that bad. But Walter put it down to, you know, I was probably with the under-18s in England, you know, serves me right, and they used to play on a Thursday. So I'd be away with England playing Thursday night, and I'd be flying back, you know, late, no, early morning, Friday, then getting on a coach at Belfield, and we're travelling to Southampton away.
Yeah, it's very demanding, isn't it?
Yeah, he started going, you know, your form was probably dipping, but he started just not training me. He just said, you're not training. He said, you need to rest. Obviously, you want to be involved with England, and I want you to be the best you can, so just keep yourself, you know, ticking over and come and train on the 30 Fridays, and hopefully that knee will settle down for you. And that's what sort of happened the majority of the first 18 months or so under Walter. And then the one pre-season, you know, we obviously started selling a lot of young players who were struggling with the money. Gavin left, Richard Dunn left, Danny left. There was, you know, players all started sort of leaving, and the core Matadazzi only lasted a year.
Yeah.
So you can see, you know, the club weren't going, they weren't attracting the better players than he was in his first year. And it was a bit disappointing. We started buying a lot of senior players, and I was thinking, oh, where are we going here? You know. It was because we had a lot of trialists. You know, we brought in a lot of trialists, and there was two Spanish kids. I think they were from Barcelona away, and Madrid. And God, Van Ringman, my trainer, I was thinking, I hope we sign these. And, you know, and then we end up signing someone else. We're thinking, that was his style. And who we brought in just surprised me. You know, Goffey was absolutely spot on.
Yeah.
You know, Goffey was a great professional. I learned a lot from Goffey. I was probably a bit too mouthy, a bit too demanding. When I'm off the pitch, I'm very quiet. On the pitch, I seem to sort of, my character changes a little bit, and I think my demands of my teammates are very high.
Yeah.
If they're not doing them, I tell them, and I won't care if, you know, who you are, if you've had so many caps or you've had so many appearances, I'm going to tell you. And some of them don't like it because they feel like they get embarrassed, you know, by a young kid. And, you know, Walter encouraged that from me, really. But Goffey pulled me to one side and not tame me, but basically said, do it in a nicer way. You're right, yeah, what you're saying, but you're putting it across the wrong way. And it's probably me scouse and, you know, just sort of shouting with frustration and not sort of, you know, I want to get the best out of my teammates as well as telling them what to do and not to knock them down a little bit, which is probably what I was doing at first. And so Goffey came in and I just love playing alongside him. Walter, you know, pulled me dad in once just to see what we need to do to try and get out. And he said, he said, you played centre-half, didn't you? And I was like, yeah, when I was about 14. I said, you're joking, are you? I said, no, yeah, of course, yeah. He goes, well, I'm going to start playing centre-half.
Yeah, you did adapt for a little while, didn't you? Were you quite versatile, I suppose, between the wing-back and the...
Yeah, it was under Howard, it was a strange one as well. You know, I think he just liked me the football and ability, because I played centre mid a lot, against Man United. You know, I played the worst game in my life against Arsenal, playing right back. I was facing the crowd. I didn't even know what I was doing. I've never played right back. I had my body position as a left back, but playing right back and against Overmars, so that was worth experience. Yeah. So I played nearly everywhere, wing back, centre mid, left centre mid, and obviously left back, left centre half. And with Goffey, Dave Weir coming in. So there was a funny story about Howard when at Old Trafford, I think it was Boxing Day, he said, just man Mark Giggs. I was like, oh, right, okay. So he shows faith in me that way. And then I seen on the warm up that Giggs had his sackies on. I said, boss, I don't think Giggs is playing. And he went, I'll just go and play in the middle then, alongside, you know, against Scholes, Keane, and Boss. Like, so I was like, oh, yeah. So, you know, it was sort of good praise and a big confidence boost that, you know, he trusted me to do so. But, you know, sometimes there were battles that I just couldn't win.
That's a tough one.
So Walter, I could play certain ways. And I think with Goffey, maybe his pace, obviously slowing down, he probably needed the extra centre half at the back then and started playing three. And it suited me. I really liked playing at the back of three. I wasn't at the tallest, but, you know, we had the experience and excitement, me, Goffey, and we just positioned ourselves quite well to read the game. And I'm just counteracted if we had like a Niall Quinn up front that want to get in front of the other. And we played well. You know, there was sometimes Dave Watson and sometimes Davey Weir. So playing back three suited me. And to be honest, it's probably my best year in a blue shirt, where I had a run of good level performances.
Well, I mean, of course, leading on from that a bit later on, you finally got the your England call up, got your first cap, and somewhat annoyingly, and I didn't actually realise this until I was having a look, the only one that you got.
Which is
quite a shock, to be honest. But I mean, before we go into the negatives of that, just how much of a special moment was that for you when you found out you were in the team and eventually?
It was similar story to me, Davey. You know, and reasons like Walter pulled me in the office a few times. He said, "Look, you don't want to be a one cat wonder. You can play for a long, long time if you do the right things." And he said, "Because you're a young kid, you know, the crowd and the media let you off a little mistakes here and there, but as you sort of start creeping as a 19 and 20 year old, you know, that'll stop and the expectations will come up, so you need to sort of keep on adding to your game and don't mess it up," which he was right. And you know, waiting for me England debut again was, you know, I was under 21s, and then I'd been called up in the squad in 99. I got called up in the squad in 98, I think it was, 99, and then 2000 actually made me debut under Sven. So, but I've had three different England managers. There was Peter Taylor, you know, there was Kevin Keegan, and there was a Howard Wilkinson, one where I was training with them for a couple of games from the under 21s, got involved with the first team. And you're just thinking, am I ever going to get my cap? Yeah. You know, and we played Italy away, and Ray Clements was sort of the goalkeeper coach at England, but he was in charge of getting the subs warmed up and getting them ready. And we're playing in Italy's, you know, national stadium, and I'm stretching behind the goal. You know, the athletic tracks, you're miles away from the south bench, and you're seeing Ray Clemens start like bounding over and shouting bully, and I heard him, but I just thought I'd just do an extra stretch and make him run a few more yards and just to make sure. And yeah. I was the closest one to him by the corner flag, and there's a few like down the goal. And as he got close, he went bully. I put my head up, going like, "Get yourself here's your moment now.
Yeah.
So get yourself ready and do what you do." And I just put my head up and went, "Yeah." He would get carried. I was like, "Oh, you." I was like, "Ah." Oh. I had to show Gareth, and he went on to again. That was the closest I got. So I had to wait another year in the early moment. And luckily enough, Sven wanted to see everyone. Really, he made a big squad, and I got my opportunity against Spain when he played at Villa Park. And he used to travel around the country when Wembley was under construction. And that was obviously fabulous. You know, making England debut, getting your cap. And Terry Sheringham, I think, jinxed me because he signed my shirt and he said, you know, one of many.
Famous last words.
Yeah, he killed me, yeah. And it wasn't long after that you know, I ended up leaving Everton and an injury problem. So that's, you know, the reason why it was still only one cap, and I'm disappointed enough to add a few more in my career, but it just wasn't to be.
Yeah, well, I mean, leading on to that, I think it was this. I've got some of the 2001 that you did leave for Rangers. I mean, how much was of that move was you, or was it the club, or because there was a cloud of, once again, kind of financial problems. I mean, what was it your say, or did you just kind of get told, "Listen, boy, you're off, mate"? How did it work?
Well, me and Jordan that season, funny enough, even though. I think there was, at the time, there was 15 supporters, clubs, I think, roughly that voted, and I got play of the year out of 14. But that season, me and Walter didn't really see eye to eye. There was a lot of negative press about me in the local papers that were all false. And there was, I just found that the club or someone in the club were leaking things that just to sort of make it unrest. But I was having contract talks, and the year before then, you know, I put in my mind that I was in and out of the team under Walter. You know, he brought in, I can't remember, that's four left backs. He brought in Unzi, he brought in Gary Naismith, he brought in Pistone. And I'm thinking, hang on a minute, I'm breaking in the England team and he's buying left backs. We don't need left backs. You know, we don't need.
That was a sort of stab,
you know what I mean? A dig. Yeah. But, you know, I didn't know, and I just thought, right, give me an opportunity and I prove you wrong, and I prove I'm the man. And I remember. My first goal in the Gladys Street, I think we played Southampton, I think it was, and I was on the bench, and I come on, took the pen, and we won. And weirdly enough, I always kicked the ball down to the keeper's right, and for some reason I went the other way, and it went in. But I've never took a penalty gone that way. But it's my first goal in the Gladys Street, and then we wanted to win the game. And but me and Malta, it just seemed to go turn a little bit sour, and I don't know whether he was trying to force me out or what, but my performances were decent. I was I got relegated to the number 12 shirt, which was number 12.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But at the end of the day, the number was a number.
Shirt,
but,
that was weird.
Yeah, you know, I've been fighting with all my career to get the number 3 Everton shirt, you know, since finding out days.
Yeah.
I finally got it, and then he brought in other players to take it off me. So, you know, at the end of the day, I was sort of getting blamed for quite a lot of stuff, but you just got to get your head down and prove them wrong, and which I did that final year. We ended up playing me. I got player of the year and stuff. So, you know, my attitude that on the pitch was you know, I remember receiving the award and the Everton player of the year awards, and you know, I've never met Alex Young before. You know, it's my dad's favourite player.
Yeah.
You know, you see him around the club, but you don't. You know, unless you go in the lounges, you have to play, you weren't really allowed into the lounges, so you never actually got the chance to meet. And he presented you with the award, and I just looked on the audience, and I hate all that speaking, you know, but you still got to say your thank yous, and you know, I'm a bit too short and shy, that doing stuff like that. And they just got I was basically said, thanks very much. I looked at Ken Wright, and who I could see in the audience, and said, I'll see you all next year, because one of the guys, I think it's the Blue Kipper boys or someone, said, look, we don't want to give you this award because everyone we give this award to has left. I think they give it to Hutch, I think they give it to Barnby, and maybe Dunk the year before or something. And I was like, well, I was adamant I'm going nowhere.
Yeah.
We were talking, but it wasn't adamant. You know, it wasn't sort of important, but there was sort of talk ongoing. Mm. But the club was saying that we've got other priorities, which was fair enough. And, but it started coming in. Phone calls started happening from Middlesbrough, from the other side. Mm. We're contacting a lot. There was a lot of rumours about other clubs which weren't true, but all I know is the club accepted three bids off the other side, Middlesbrough and Rangers. And
actually accepted a bid, did they?
Yes, and you know, a couple of years later, I found out there was three or four bids they put in, which I didn't find out about. But that was obviously never going to happen.
Yeah. Obviously, I know you're the Blues through and through, of course.
No. The only reason was because it was all the England situation.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of Liverpool influence. There was Sammy Lee. Gerard Houllier was always around the England of the 21s, the England first team, and probably Tannic. He's probably speaking to the coaches who were coaches of England and stuff like that, and seeing the performances. But that was never going to happen. But, you know, Volta turned around and said, look, if you don't need the season, I'm going to let you rock in the reserves. You've got the World Cup. You want to be in the World Cup. You better move on. And I just said to the agent, which is Trevor Stephen at the time, I said, well, I'm going to outlast him. He won't last very long, so I'm not going anywhere. Let's just carry on. And, you know, Walter ends up leaving. You know, I can start afresh with somebody else. Mm. But as pre-season, you know, the whole summer went. Ken Wright was speaking to me with Trevor, and I was away in sunny Benidorm, of all places, with the family and my mate. And I flew back handy to Ken Wright, said he wants us all sorted out for the season. So I was absolutely made up, and they took all my mates out for the meals. Mm. And said, look, I'm going to leave you here. I'm off to, you know, sign the contract. I turned up at Goodison on the Wednesday, and the assistant said, Bill's not here. Which then obviously makes me find out what's going on. And I found out through my agent that Bill has said the board have changed their mind. That was a massive big shock. And the pre-season starts, and I started pre-season. All the new faces were there. I think Stubbs should come in as well.
You were going at this point.
Well, I still didn't think it was ever going to happen, because I haven't spoke to anyone. I haven't spoke to any clubs at all. And just as pre-season, I had injections in my knee at the club, which I think the club, that was an influence in them, because they knew how much I was struggling. They knew I wasn't training. I had this cortisone injection in my knee, which I don't think is medically correct of how they done it. You know, they even went behind the doctor's back, or the doctor they didn't trust. And I think I'm seeing a second opinion of another doctor. And it sort of got handled pretty wrong, the injury. And I think Everton probably just thought, let's cash him in while he's still walking. That's how I sort of feel now, thinking back at it. But I wasn't going anywhere. I was staying on my own. The pre-season was kicking on. I was just running around Belfield, and they were speaking to all the players, and I just said, well, they'll be back fit and be ready to go. Walter, you know, as I said, I've just got that, he's going to let me rot in the reserves, which was a killer, thinking I'd put my body on the line last season.
Of course.
You know, and I was quite successful. I thought I did feel like I needed to be rewarding, but it wasn't like it had to happen now. You know, it could have happened in January or the following year. There was no rush to do it. But the club felt that they needed to maybe sell the assets, and Trevor Stevens told me that David Murray at Rangers wants to have a little word with me, just come up for the weekend. There was a lot of press speculation about me around here, and I just thought, well, I'll just go for Glasgow for the weekend, sort of get out and see what happens, and you know, that was it. But then as soon as I got up and met David Murray, who had, at the time, I didn't realise he's got no legs, and he's on crutches, and he's showing me around Ibrox, and he's obviously trying to sell me the club, and I'm just adamant, going, well, why are you doing this? Because I'm not signing.
Yeah.
You know, that wasn't in my head to sign, and as the meeting kept on going on, I picked up the phone to my dad, and I said, Dad, I think I'm going to sign. I think my dad nearly collapsed. And I said, He goes, why? He goes, I don't know. I just feel wanted. You know, I haven't felt wanted at the club I love for a good couple of years. You know, and Bolter's bringing more players in. It doesn't look like he's going to, you know, he's not going to play any. I want to get the England team and get into the World Cup and, you know, start winning things. And he's like, well, what's Trevor saying? And I said, I don't know. But he just said he wanted me, the manager at Dick Advocat. You know, there was Arthur Newman, there was Ronald De Boers, Tori Andrew Floyd was brought in, they were pushing for the Champions League. There was, at the time, David Murray said, hopefully in 2 or 3 years we're going to be in the Premier League, because we haven't talked of UEFA, raising themselves, we're going to join the Premier League. And I just said, well, I'm not signing for Middlesbrough for the start, because Steve McLaren asked me to go look at the training ground. I go, why do I want to see the training ground? You know what? You know, they spent a lot of money on it, but I'm thinking, I'm not, you know, as long as you got 2 goals on a footy pitch, you're not really that bothered.
Yeah.
You know, that was sort of my attitude. And the reason was, one, it's red, and two, yeah, I'll have to play against Everton. It was a massive sort of thing for me that, well, if I can sign for Rangers, you know, Middlesbrough and Liverpool offered me a lot more money. You know, that was never going to be an option. And then I was up there for a couple of days, and my medical at Rangers lasted over 2 weeks because of how bad my knee situation was. It was very close to not really happening. I've mentally in my head come back and got my boots and my stuff from Belfield, which was the hardest thing I think I've ever done. It was I don't think I said ta-ra to anyone. You know, I missed a bit. I was like speaking to players when only Rangers were interested, you know. The whole squad had played for Rangers, I think, at some point. There was Ryder, there was Big Dunk, there was John Collins at Celtic, there was Alex Clone, and Gazza. I was asking them all questions, what's it like, and you know, it was a very traditional club, and like, right, it's okay. I was like, yeah, but you know, it's Scotland but you know, it was the Champions League thing and what they wanted to do in the Champions League. So that was, I thought, that's fair enough, that's a plus, but you know, that's going to be just sort of staying here. But then, if I'm not going to play football for the next 18 months, you know, where am I going to end up? You know, if Walter still is the man in charge of this club, I'm going to, you know, my career is going to put on hold. And it was a horrible decision to make.
Yeah.
The club's accept, the manager said he's not going to play me, so I have no choice. I've got no other option. And then I've got another manager and another chairman. He just showed me, obviously, doing the sales pitch on me.
Yeah.
But it worked, you know, to be honest. And, you know, as I said, my medical lasted 2 weeks. And Rangers missed out on John Hartson failing the medical on the knee. And I think David Murray just thought, well, I'm not losing another one. He's had all the reports. The club doctor, who had, he had a full-time club doctor at Rangers at the time, you didn't have to go to Rodney Street if you were sick or anything like that. he was a Dutch doctor, and he was baffled because I could do everything he was asking me. But he's like looking at me scans and my x-rays and my ultrasound, saying he's going, oh, that shouldn't happen. I'm thinking, oh, I've been like this for, the, you know, 18 months maybe. You know, that's, I think he warned them and said, look, he could break down at any moment. But, you know, if you want him, you might just say he can't. So,
yeah.
You know, luckily enough, well, I was on the training pitch doing a few drills, and then a car came on the pitch, and it was Sean Connery. And I was thinking off my head here, and he just said, the chairman wants you. So I was quite buzzing because I was doing quite a bit of a hard session.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I don't think I've got much in me. So the bomb comes save me. and David Murray basically, he just said in the office, goes, look, we're happy. I've agreed with Everton. And I'm not 100%, but I think Everton wanted 7 million. The Rangers didn't want to pay more than 6. And he agreed on 6.5. And he said, but the only, and it's going to go in, obviously, a few instalments now. And the other half is when Everton sell Goodison, I'm going to get the steal. I was like, it's made of wood. He started laughing. He goes, yeah, there is steel, Michael, there somewhere. Not a lot.
Yeah, not a lot.
But enough for me. And that's where David Murray was. That was his sort of forte in the steel business. And so I felt like I was getting sold for 2 blues and a goldfish.
Yeah,
I was thinking, so what is it? 6.5 and steel out of Goodison. I'm thinking, I can only remember a hot dog standing in the enclosure that was made of steel.
I mean, what a bizarre story. They put the steel in from Goodison as part of the deal.
It was just a business type thing. But then it was a relief, you know, sadly it was to leave the club. It was a relief that I can start playing football now. And it was, you know, it was a long drawn out medical. It was, you know, it was 2 weeks and then the first game was away, and the first home game was a Champions League game.
Yeah.
So it was sort of what shocked me then, it was I wasn't playing. I was like, I've just kind of moved all the way here. And I'm on the bench, but then I was so sort of not naive but blinded of Everton. I didn't really take much notice of any other team or any other players. I just all I knew as a kid was Everton and the odd world class star from another team. But you know, there wasn't much I'd sort of took notice of. I was just sort of always Everton. And when I went to Rangers, I thought, well, they want me to sign me, I'm going to play. But you know, I didn't realise, you know, Arthur Newman was, you know, a class Dutch international left back, and he still want me, and I'm on the bench and going, I haven't come all the way to Scotland to sit on the bench. But again, that's where you just got to get on with it again, and you've got to earn your crust like I did at Everton as a young kid, to earn the crust to go, yeah, they sign me, but it doesn't mean you're an automatic starter.
Yeah.
You've got to earn your right, and we had very good players, and that the training up there was, you needed a pre-match meal. It was they were that good, and the training was just another level again, which was great, because it makes you learn. You learn so much. Okay, the opposition up there weren't as tough as the Premier League, but the games were very tough because it was their cup final. You know, you're playing against a Dundee or a Hearts. If you played for Hearts and you had a good game, Rangers or Celtic could probably buy you.
Yeah.
So you had that every week. So, you know, if you've got to 0-0 at Ibrox after 20 minutes, the fans would turn on you. You know, so there was expectations and pressure. It wasn't just about winning. You had to win with a bit of style. But the players, you know, we had a good set of players, but we would bollock each other because we knew the level that we could be at. If someone wasn't there up to scratch, there was some riots. And sometimes I was thinking, oh, we're winning 2-0, calm down, lads.
Yeah.
You know, but it was just their level. You know, they wanted more. They wanted four. They wanted five. And, you know, they just wanted the level. Because if the level drops, it makes it harder for your teammates. And, you know, we just have to sort of be at our best at all times. And Advocat was, you know, he was a bit of a dictator in training. That way he took everything. And everything had to be, you know, pristine. Everything had to be perfect for him to be happy. And, you know, which was good. Because it makes us, you know, makes us concentrate. Because my Lionel's rollers thinking, oh, we just won two games, so it'll be all right.
Yeah.
Every game you have to win. If you draw, you lost the league.
Yeah.
You know, there was one season we lost one game and lost the league. The pressure.
Yeah, so it is so
on getting it. You know, the level is not, obviously there's, you know, now it has dropped, but you know, it was just the pressure to perform week in, week out, and the fans.
Yeah.
You know, it was a massive club, and it was good. And in the Champions League game, I think I scored. I scored in the free kick. My first and only Champions League goal. And you think it'd be another good moment, but again, like Everton, I was sort of sitting there thinking, what's going on? We just won 3-1, and we're getting bollocked. You know, we're getting absolutely hammered by Advocat at the end of the game, and it's because it was a two-legged game. And if we go to Russia and get beat 2-0, we're out.
Yeah.
You know, and I was thinking, and you'd understand it, but I was thinking, we're not going to get beat 2-0. But it's Champions League, it's very easily done. And we went through anyway. But it was that level of, you know, we're winning 2-0, don't let it drop. We're winning 3-0, don't let it drop. And we let it slip. They got a late goal, 3-1. And, you know, all our good work got sort of Advocat on a bit of a rage.
Yeah.
You know, and that was, he just wanted the best out of everyone. And his style was a lot different than what I was used to. But there was a lot of Dutch players there. There was a lot of senior pros there in the game who sort of went along with it. So you can't sort of get out of line and just do what they do.
Yeah.
Just get on with it. And as long as you're training well and you play well, that's all that matters. But unfortunately for me, after about 12, 13 games in, I finished the game, went home, got in the car, and I was meeting one of the lads, I think Claudio Reina. the American captain, and his wife were going somewhere, and I just couldn't get up the car. You know, he just sort of went into a big balloon, found a doctor, and went back to the training ground, and that's where me sort of injury problem sort of really started for Rangers, and it was a
that was the doctor knew about him. Was that 18 months to delay off that?
It was a knockback because I was back after four. And they were contemplating whether to play me in the last couple of games of the season. But the doctor said, look, there's no point. You know, let's just, you know, my fitness levels and everything went. Well, that was a good thing about Rangers. They didn't mess about. You know, maybe, you know, I don't really want to select the club, but, you know, I wasn't getting x-rays, I wasn't getting scans. I was just getting told to do certain things and I wasn't getting assessed properly. Rangers just, you know, got the best surgeon in the world, Dr. Steadman, flew me over to Colorado, Denver with the doctor and said, get it sorted and come back.
Yeah.
And at that time, it was something daft, like $25,000-$30,000 they paid, I think. And you know, everyone wouldn't pay £100 for the next one. You know, so it was sort of, I was in the right hands. You know, Rangers obviously spent a lot of money on me, so he wanted to get me right, and my rehab with Steadman was spot on. Yeah. And he warned me very early on.
Yeah.
But when he looked at me scan, he was thinking, well, you know, you might not have to go through this. And then I explained my circumstances. He put a dye in the scan and then realised how bad of a state my knee was in. He opened me up and he said, Michael, you were one game away from never playing. He said, your knee's perfect. He said, you've got one thin thread of your patella left. He said, if that went, it would have been a long, long, long way back and you possibly wouldn't have played football again. How did he let it get in this state? And I was like, explained that was all down to, in his mind, was the injections I had earlier in Everton, where they put the steroids injection into the tendon. And the medical fact is you've got to put them around the tendon to protect the tendon, not inside. So they put the needle in, they've ripped clean tendons. Because of the steroid, I couldn't feel it. Explaining why I could pass my medical and play so many games, and it was just a wear and tear that finally blew up. And he said, "Look, you're very lucky." He said, "But listen to me. Do this. Don't go too slow. Don't go too fast. And listen to what I say." And then he put on the phone me, and my rehab, I flew by. You know, I really went through it all. It was a kick in the teeth, but I was just had my head down. Advocate wasn't the nicest manager to be around with when you were injured. Which some managers are, you know, some managers don't want to speak to you because you're no good to them, which is fair enough. And I said, oh, well, at the end of the day, I can't do nothing for them, so I've just got to concentrate on getting myself back into the team, getting myself back fit. So four and a half months, I was rolling, I was kicking a ball, and there was talk of me probably playing a last game or so in the season, which they just said, let's wait for pre-season, get a good pre-season, you might come back fit and strong, ready to go. And in that pre-season, we were in America, in Canada, Toronto, and my knee, I couldn't sort of train for 2 weeks on the bounce without my knee sort of swelling. No pain, just swelling. So there was something not right. So I spoke to Steadman and I just told him the issues. I said, I've been doing this now for about 6 weeks, training good for 2 weeks, and then I had a rest a couple of days, and then again 2 weeks. And he went, I said, right, I know exactly what it is.
He knew
by the phone. He said, I want to assess you. He goes, that operation, Michael, 30-40%, you need to come in for the second operation. And it's not as bad as what you think, but it's not bad. It's bad news, but it's not as bad as you think. I flew back over. And the reason is my tendon is just grew a little bit too much. So you have like a bit of it's called the sheath. So it's like basically a skin that covers the tendon. It's just a bit too tight. So the second operation was basically to lift it up and just put it back a little bit looser. And he said, that's it. He said, I've checked your tendon, everything perfect. There's nothing wrong with it. It's fine. He said, but you've got to go through the whole rehab again. And that was the killer, because you sort of had all summer thinking, you know, I'm going to repay, you know, the fans back and the club and show the club what I'm about to do. And there was a new manager just come. I wanted to prove a point to him, you know, because obviously the old manager's left and he's the one who signed me, so I had to sort of start at the bottom, and I got my head all around that, and then I was out, and then that rehab was sort of that was a nightmare for me, really. It was a tough one for me. The club were changing. There was a lot of big players leaving. The money seemed to be sort of... They failed to get into the Premier League, as they wanted to do. They failed to sort of go on the Champions League. So the whole club itself, I think they were in serious debt. So it started to change. And that was a tough year for me. We brought in Mikel Arteta. Mikel was, obviously, it was a good great talent. And, and I missed out on a double and a treble.
In them days.
That was hard to swallow. It was hard to swallow, but you can't do nothing about it. I was made up with my teammates, and if you look back at videos, I was never nowhere near the photos, or I wasn't doing a John Terry anyway. There's a picture of me with my son when he's a little kid, just in the dugout watching the lads go out and enjoy it. But the press were telling me, and the Rangers press office, to get on the pitch and wait for the fans, and I didn't want to take any credit for anything. I haven't done nothing. He said, I wanted to deserve the right to do that. And I thought, well, I'm staying here. I'm not dissing the crowd. I just don't want to get acknowledged for sitting in air, man. Did you think I'd be lying on a medical bed for 18 months? So I want to earn the right to get applauded and win something.
And you did.
Luckily, I did. Yeah, in the final year.
Yeah. You got the Scottish League Cup and the Premier League. So I mean, am I right in saying at senior level at least were they your first pieces of silverware?
That it was,
I mean, that must have been a pretty special moment for you.
Yeah, it was. You always watched it as a kid. You don't dream about winning trophies and medals with anyone else. It's your boy or club, which was Everton, and that sort of got took away from me really. And he's like, well. That one of the reasons why you got to move is to win things. You don't get remembered that much. You've got to go out and earn the right. At the end of the day, winning stuff as kids is great, but you want to do it at a professional level. And even though it was the League Cup, it was the first one, so it does mean stuff to you. And that was it was a very strange season, that, because under my contract situation that I was talking about, where the Rangers found out there wasn't enough steel. I couldn't, they had a contract there which they couldn't afford to pay me. it was a difficult time. But again, David Murray, he was a nice chap, a really good, you'd listen to him. He was always in around the club. He was in training ground and, at every game, Sean O'Connor you bring to the games and stuff like that. And he just pulled me. He goes, look, we're struggling. We lost the league the year before. Celtic had run away with it. We need to play, Michael. And the club just can't afford to play you. But we can try and get up to some agreement. And but if not, you're going to be sitting here again in another 2 years left on your contract. And then who's going to take a player who's never played football for 4 years in Scotland? You've got to think of your future career. And it was sort of wise words. But again, he's doing the sales pitch, and he said, look, if you pay 4,000. Every time you play, and I'll pay 4,000. We'll speak to Everton, and then when if you go over that line, I think it was the 40 or 60 game, we'll get come to agreement. Is that okay? And I went, yeah, that's fine, and went back downstairs. That was at Ibrox before one of the games, which I wasn't expecting to be playing. And then McLeish was like, you can see that he wanted me attention. He goes, what did he say? What did he say? And I just explained to him, yeah, I'm free to play if you want to play me. He went, oh, great, get your kick on you on the bench. So I was like, sounds, because I've been going to the game, supporting the boys and just sort of having a pie in the place. I've had nothing to do. I've been training like, if I trained like Pele or Messi or whatever, it wouldn't have made an absolute difference of getting into the side. And McLeish was good that way. I think he liked me professionalism. I didn't disrupt the training. I still trained like I was going to be playing the weekend, but even though when I wasn't. So, in a way, I probably trained harder because I know I didn't have to save myself for the weekend. So I think he's very appreciative how I went about things, during that period. But the problem was he put me on with a minute to go. And I pulled him. I went, that's just cost me 4 grand. laughing and joking. He went, fine, what? He didn't know what to do. He didn't know the deal. He wasn't the top of the meeting. I was like, oh, surely. So we had a laugh and a joke over it. And then from then on, our season turned around. I've got to the League Cup semi-final against Celtic. We beat them, which is obviously back then. If you beat them, you've got a good chance of winning it.
Yeah.
So that was a great game, a whole fair game at Hampden, and then we went on to win it. And then we were playing catch up against Celtic that season. Mm. And you know, the final game, which is a famous one up there, and that was called Helicopter Sunday, is, you know, Celtic failed to get a point. They needed a point and we needed to win, and they got beat at home and we won away. So the helicopter changed the ribbons on the trophy and they come back towards us, and it was one of the strangest games I've ever played in. And
yeah.
But it just felt that a bit of calm had come back my way with my injuries, and
yeah.
Then I got back playing that I couldn't play because of politics issues, and then I'm paying to sort of play for the club to get my career back on track, and it was sort of like, well, there's my reward. So it was all worth it in the end to lift up the trophy and win the league is something special.
Yeah, definitely. So then, I mean, of course, you went abroad then to PSV. Once again, it was almost plagued a little bit of the game by the injuries, wasn't it? But you did encounter certain Ronald Koeman. I don't feel like I'm throwing you under the bus here, but once again, when I was having a look on just doing a bit of research before, I happened to come across some of your tweets that were at the back end of the Martinez era, where we knew he was going and it was who's next. And I did see a few people quote Koeman to you, and you could sense you were biting your tongue a little bit. Did you foresee what was going to happen?
I was hoping I was proven wrong. But that move to PSV was, you know, again, a massive club, and the players that play for them, you know, there was Romario, Ronaldo, you know, they're around the club. You're like, Jesus, you know, it's world class stars, and their level, they want to cheer in the Champions League. It's all about the Champions League for them, and you know, they got beat by a last goal. They drew. With the away goal in the year before against AC Milan, the semi-final. So they would have been playing Liverpool at Istanbul. But AC Milan scored the last minute away goal to put them through. So AC Milan ended up playing Liverpool. So for them to contact me to play, you know, to take me to the next level, that was a massive confidence boost. You know, they were selling, obviously, the left-back went to Tottenham. Young Po Lee, I think his name is, or something like that, Young Lee. They sold him onto Tottenham after that, and Van Bommel left. And they brought myself in, and we had a top side, you know, Cocky, and it ended up being a few more in the Clyde and stuff like that. But we had Fafan, yeah, Kone. Yeah, I signed the same week as Kone, and Aruna was, you know, when he first came, he was raw. Which he, I think he's still raw when he finishes career, but he had some pace on him, and he had some strength, and he had some ambition. You do your talk when you sign for the club, and you go, you know, it's great to be here, and you can't wait to get, you know, start playing, and you know, start winning things. And Aruna was basically something completely opposite. He goes, it's great to be here, like a stepping stone, and then the dream is to sign for Man United and Real Madrid or Barcelona. He said, I thought he hasn't even played a game yet.
How did he do there? I mean, I can't remember
what he was doing. Yeah, he was up front with Fafan and Hesseling. Right. He needed a lot of chances.
Yeah,
but, you know, but in Holland, he played three up front. So he'd have a lot of 1v1s. So some of them he put away, some of them he wouldn't. But we had that much of a great time. He created a lot for him. So he would get a decent ratio of goals, I suppose, but we missed an awful lot. But you know, we had a good side, and you know, we ran away with the league. We shouldn't have really. We won the league that early, that our season finished in April with the 16th. So Hiddink just let us all go home. So I came home for a week, 10 days, and then we had to report back in the middle of May for the cup final. So we went to
what state was everybody in at that point? Had everyone been themselves at home, or
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, they're very professional. They're sort of, you know, they're very laid back, and it's just it's a job to them. You know, there's no big flash Harrys. There's a cock who captained Barcelona for 5 years. Mm. You live around the corners of a normal house, you know, where I was renting, and everyone was just normal, and football was just a job. Go there and do your business and come home. There wasn't, you know, I used to turn up there a bit too early in the morning. I got turned up probably 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, and warm myself up, and they'd be going, "What are you doing?" So we don't start till 9. Yeah. I was like, you know, it was just like that Dutch German mentality. Yeah. There. But everyone, I'm sure everyone hid in the car park like 5 to 9, and then they all come in. You know, just like, you know, back here, you get sort of seen as being, you know, more of a professional if you're there a little bit earlier. And but then, you know, I get there, there's no keys to get in. You know, so you're just seeing your sitting. So I could have stayed in bed for half an hour here. But it was, you know, the great family club, you know, and the history behind them and what they do. And the Mr. Phillips, you know, I didn't realise, you know, Phillips, the make the brand, I didn't realise that was their actual sports club. They had a basketball team, a hockey team, and a football club, and PSV is their football club, and everyone in Eindhoven basically works for Phillips. And it was a great community, and a lot of internationals and Americans, Chinese and stuff who live in the area, because obviously the tech giants that they are, and then obviously match day, the whole city's a sort of at a standstill, and they all go to the game.
Yeah.
So it was but again, the fans were nuts, crazy. You know, they were, if you kick the ball overhead out, you know, they were groaning. Yeah. it was total Dutch football. But yeah, Luckily, I adapted quite quick, because obviously my experience with Rangers and being along with a lot of Dutch players, and Arthur Newham, who was a good friend of mine, he ended up being good mate to Rangers. He was the next player at PSV, and spoke to him beforehand about him. He said, you'd love it. Jan Bouters, famously for doing Gascoigne's in the eye, you know, that Phantom of the Opera, the elbow. He was my coach at Rangers, and then he was my coach at PSV. So, that was when he brought some Koeman came. So we won the league, and then we got beaten in the cup final against Ajax last minute, extra time. Snyder got sent off to them. We got players sent off, we won 0 up 1-1, and last kicker against Huntelaar. Yeah. Ajax went back. It was a sickening idea, because Ajax finished fifth that season, and you know, as I said, we ran away with the league, so we threw that away. It was disappointing to lose that, and that was at Rotterdam, where, you know, where we won the, you know, the cup final back in Vienna. So I'm sort of made up being in the same stage and where that happened.
Yeah.
Concentrating on my own cup final, no wonder we never won. But it was a great experience, and I had 2 years. So my second year, I needed a place to get my third year. But as you said about injuries, I went into with a tackle with my dodgy knee.
Yeah.
And it didn't need an operation. I just needed to rest. So they had a fella called Marth, who basically ran the whole PSV, from massages to kit man to anything. And he said, your knee's wobbling, so put it in a cast and go and have 6-8 weeks off at home and come back when you're ready. So, you know, that was disappointing, because they don't really count the league game. They don't have the League Cup game over there that they don't count as appearances.
Yeah.
They have the cup game that they, so that are the FA Cup, say.
Yeah.
That they do count. So I didn't really play that many games. So I got back into the team and got to the cup final, you know. Just about made enough appearances to get myself a league medal as well, a league shield as they called it.
Yeah, for sure.
So winning back to back leagues. It was obviously a good achievement for me, disappointing not to get the cup. But then Koeman came in, but like PSV, they're known for it of, you know, they have a good year, and they sell one or two of the main players, and then they bring in a few more from overseas, from Brazil, Argentina, etc., and try and sort of develop them and then sell them as a profit, you know, like Robin and Van Nistelrooy, Romario, and others that I mentioned
like
before.
Business,
so
isn't it, for them?
It is, and you know, and the fans. Sometimes we probably see it as a bit bitter, or why is he leaving?
Yeah.
They sort of embrace it and go, we've made him. You know, they're proud that they've made that player the player he was, and they know they can't hit the height they want to be winning the Champions League. You know, they've got, as I said, the semi-final. They want to be winning Champions League trophies, but they know they can't match the big boys in Europe by money, so they've got to do it elsewhere by, you know, bringing young talent in and developing as players. And Holland, his role half the time was very big for German, Spanish and English scouts to get them, and Chelsea were taking a few, and then obviously Barcelona taking a few at Van Bommel and stuff. So, you know, PSV were used to it. Tuchel came and brought a lot of players in, and brought a Mexican left back, Oviedo in. But I was still playing all the pre-season games. I thought I was still going to be involved. Yeah. We had the sort of, you know, I can't pronounce the name. It was basically the Charity Shield before the season starts, and I wasn't involved in that. In that squad, which was a bit of a big surprise for me.
There was no idea.
I just wasn't involved in that squad thing. And then I just thought, well, there we go. He obviously wants to play his new signing, which is fair enough. Mm. So it looks like I've got a fight on my hands, still waiting for an opportunity to go. So I was willing to wait, and I'm confident enough that if he gives me the chance, I'll, you know, the lad will get back in. And that was sort of my attitude. And he asked me to play in the reserves, which I did quite a lot for PSV because of the knee injury from the year before. Yeah. So I had no problem to doing that. And then I walked into his office, and now he said, we'll go over to the academy side and to the game kicking off at 1 o'clock. I said, I'm not playing on that. Mm. He goes, you know? I said, I'm not. I said, my knees are that bad. Like, I've been told, I can't, you know, since the Everton days, don't play on artificial pitch. When I was playing in Scotland, at Rangers, don't play on an artificial pitch. I wouldn't play on them. I got told not to play on it. The last thing you need to do, Michael, is to put any more pressure on your knee. Cool. So I just explained my situation to him, and he just felt like I was going against him. Mm. And I said, look, speak to Jan, because Jan Belcher is, you know, he's knew me for 4 years.
Yeah.
He'll explain, you know, I've got a history of this. And he said, will you go and speak to Jan then? So I got kicked out of his office. I went to Jan. I said, explain to that idiot, will you? You know, just, and he goes, Michael, he won't. I said, go and speak to him, let me know. And he just said, once you're playing, I'll go home. I said, well, I'm not playing. Because I'm not putting my career on risk, because, you know, I haven't warmed up properly for that week, because it was like a Monday. Yeah. You know, I had the weekend off, going from nothing to a full game. It would have been difficult for me with my knee. And so from that day on, really, me and Ronald didn't really see eye to eye. There was talk to me going to Blackburn, and that I never really materialised. I think he thought I was going to Blackburn, but I've never spoke to him. I don't know. I think it might have been just Dutch, you know, paper talk and stuff. But I had no sort of conversation. But I think he thought I was off. And then when the window closed, that was it. He'd done an Iasi on me. He basically just said,
So you've seen all that before, when that was in the...
Yeah, so I was, you know, expecting it. I thought, enough. Well, all I've got to do now is keep myself fit and ready and hope Blackburn do want me in January, you know. And so I just have to keep myself fit. So I'm playing a lot of reserve games. Sometimes playing with the first team, if they were sure, but not many.
Yeah.
I've moved to another changing room. You know, sit next to Clive and then sit next to some kid who can't speak a word of English. Maybe from Brazil or something, you know, it was difficult, but, you know, the older lads, I was seeing them sort of outside of training, you know, the Cockings and that, Andre Oyo. So, Dave, that's just the way he is, Mike. So I just thought, I'll swallow it. It's going to be a long 6 months.
Yeah.
But just get on with it and hope to keep myself fit and wait for the opportunity, which never come. But luckily enough, you know, the lads were doing pretty well. The training, you know, we were, I think, we're 13 or 14 points clear before Christmas.
Yeah.
But then after the January, it all turned, and speaking to the players, that they all lost them. You know, they obviously not going out there to sort of lose the league, but things started creeping in, and the players were getting very unsettled. His mannerisms, he's upset, and he wanted to put his authority on the senior play that we had there, you know.
Yeah.
And I think from the last game of the season, we were third, and we won the goal by a goal because we won 5-1. So, you know, he won the league, but he sacked him straight away.
Yeah.
You know, the PSV knew that's not the level. You know, we don't do that. And at the time, he come the first person to play for all three big teams, Feyenoord, Ajax and PSV, and I manage all three. I'll probably get sacked by all three. So it was when he came to the club, you know, I've never spoken to Ken Wright in my life, but now with my new job, I'm sort of consulting an agency.
Locally,
I've got a few good players there. I've got a few that'll have lads as well. Hopefully they're going to do well in the future. And I got an opportunity to speak to Bill, and I just explained my thoughts on Ronald, and he basically said, well, Machiri wants him. It's his number one target. And I go, fair enough. But, you know, you're being warned. The players won't take to him, rightly or wrongly. You know, it's just seems to happen. It's followed him at quite a lot of clubs. Even at Valencia, he spent a lot of money. Left them in a little bit of dire straits, and they still haven't built their stadium because he spent the cash on, you know, on players that weren't good enough. And he said there was warning signs there, but I think Machiri, you know, reading between the lines, probably heard his name getting shouted about to take over at Wenger, and probably thought he was the right man. So I was really hoping that Koeman would prove me wrong, and he did have a good season under Southampton the year before. He lost a lot of players that summer. But as I said before, the Dutch managers are used to losing 6 or 7 players every year.
And
getting a team together. The problem with the Dutch style, I feel, is if things start going wrong, they don't seem to know how to handle it or turn it around.
If you
have a settled tide, you know, if when a new manager comes in, everyone's up, everyone's trying to prove the point, and everyone's trying to, you know, impress the manager. And then when it sort of gets settled a little bit and things don't go as well as planned, there's no sort of, I can't see any charisma. They sort of start pointing blames and pointing.
Got that arm around the shoulder.
No, and there's a few. I think Van Gaal was similar at United. You know, because you've got to play. It's not my fault you can't play that level. That was their attitude.
Yeah.
You know, which is in a way because they used to play. It's sort of managing, you know, top players, or they've been a top player. They expect their players to be able to do a certain level. If they can't do it, he can't do the arm around the shoulder to get the best out of them. And being a manager, I think that's, you've got to have that in your locker. Well, you've got to have someone in your staff to have that. If you want to be the good cop, bad cop, your job as a manager is to get the best out of your playing squad. And I think he sort of failed to do that.
Yeah. If you were in the Everton dressing room now, just following on from Koeman, and especially since you've played under Koeman or been with Koeman, who would you be looking out of these targets that we're getting linked with at the moment to come in? Would you have a preference? Is there anybody you want us to bring in, or?
I think it's a massive. I've got to do my echo column.
And
I find it difficult with this question because I think the board. I think because of the lack. Oh, not the lack. I'll say lack. Well, you know, yeah, the recruitment side of things was such a failure. They took a gamble and bringing Koeman in, which we a lot of hope was the right person, because I do think Ronald. For his bad points, I think we've gone from one manager who was sort of too nice to Ronald. So the players were sort of fighting, I think, to and fro from one to the other. And, you know, I think in the end, I think Ronald's handle of Ross wasn't good. But at the time, I thought it might have helped Ross, you know, because I think probably sort of pest him with all the good bits about him that might have made him a little bit too big, and he comes out a bit too confident, and I think he's maybe too big for his boots, and some performances that he just need to track back, where our Dutch manager will expect Cocu to track back, who's 36. So, you know, if Ross is not doing it, he's got, you know, what's he done in his career? That's how they will think. What have you done? You've only played 50 games for the club, you haven't won anything. You know, so I thought that might have been a reaction for Ross to go, you're okay. Early on in our conversation, where Walter said, when you're a young kid, you do get away with a lot of little mistakes here and there that don't really get noticed. But as you start creeping into the England team and start getting a little bit older, you need to iron these problems out. And I think Ross has struggled to do that. And I think Ronald's handling, in the end, was wrong. But at the time, I was a bit of a fan of it, thinking, I think Ross now needs to nail down and start coming up with the goods. Which he didn't. But then Ronald's brought in players that I don't feel we needed. I just see Valencia coming all over again. You know, bringing in players that I don't think we needed was other priorities.
Yeah.
we needed. Leighton has been a great servant for us, been a fantastic left back, but we were in Europe, so how are you going to expect Leighton to perform 8, 9 out of 10 Thursday and Sundays?
He's on the wrong side of 30 now.
We want to protect Leighton for that, you know, for the important Premier League games, and when you start playing game after game, your form sort of dips a little bit, and start, you start getting into this sort of level where it's not, you're not doing anything bad, but you're not really putting it in, putting it into any of the games. And I just felt that we needed a cover for Leighton to give him a break. You know, we obviously needed to replace Ron, but it wasn't just Ron. We let three strikers go. We let Valencia go. We let Kore go. We didn't count them as strikers. Lukaku. So you've got to, you know, that's got to be a priority. And I think Kouyaté, we had an open checkbook. So he was never going to say no to anything that got put in front of him, really. And I think he just had too many pieces in the jigsaw to figure out. He probably thought Wayne could do the job for him up front as number nine. And you know Wayne's not his best position. And I know it's really disappointing, because now this season we just seem to be playing catch up. And you know, now they're trying to right from wrong. And it's a massive decision, because you can think, do we bring in someone short term? Are we in that much of a dire straits? Have we got that squad so poor that we need to bring in someone short term who knows how to sort of out of a mess?
Like the Allardyce type character.
Like the Allardyce type, or, you know, people like that. But then do we trust him in January to bring in a striker?
Yeah.
Because whoever comes in still need to get a striker in January. So who are we going to attract in January? And then if whoever else short term comes in and does half decent job, that's another payoff. And then we've got to bring in the right man who we hope for in the summer. And then he might not like the signings that we made in January.
Yeah.
So it's a perfect man for me is someone who, I don't know if there's anyone out there like, but you know, we've got Premier League experience, because you know, even Guardiola struggled with the Premier League.
Yeah.
He's got a fantastic squad. But you know, wanted to play a certain way, but he still struggled to adapt, and now he's running away with it. Now he's sussed it. But you know, last season he struggled with his team and how the Premier League sort of goes about games and what he was used to in Germany and Spain. So I don't really want another manager coming in that doesn't know the Premier League.
Yeah.
But then I want a top manager who's going to be able to attract someone in January and for the summer. But these managers who've got that calibre, have they ever thought of sort of relegation before? Probably not, because they've always had probably the highest calibre of players to play a certain style to win things. Yeah. And I want that winning mentality. So it's a very difficult one for the board to come up with. You know, at the moment, we're talking about Marco Silva. And I feel...
What's your opinion on Silva?
Yeah, obviously I'm going to support him if he comes through. You know what I mean? I just feel like there could be someone there. I think with the amount of money we seem to be spending on managers seems to be outrageous when we haven't got a striker. You know, I think the cost of Koeman was £35 million.
Jesus.
You know, we had to pay Southampton, you know, £5 million. He was on £6.5 million a year wages, and we had to pay Martinez of £10 million. So you're thinking, for £35 million, surely could we just give someone £15 million a year, 2 year contract, someone good? Because is there anyone out there? Please, you know what I mean? You know, I know the Chan has swallowed a lot of ones, but I don't fancy Pellegrini. I think he struggled with City. You know, I don't think he's Everton. You know, I think the fans want to, you know, that's, I think Ronald lost the fans quite early on. I remember Ronald first come. The fan, the pre-season games, a couple of went to, they were singing his name. And then as the season got on, there was not even one chant towards Ronald. So we lost the fans very early on. So I think that's going to be very important, that the manager sort of gets to know us.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like what Ronald done by living in Manchester and his reasons that you want to be away from it. But when the going gets tough, you don't know what's going on in the city. And if you're off swanning away in Manchester, having your dinner, you don't know what's going on in the heart of the club.
Oh, yeah, he's just avoiding
it. You know, it's very easy to sort of go, well, that's work. As I said, that's the Dutch mentality. You know, go in for work and worry about it then, and off field you don't. But I think Premier League, it doesn't happen that way. It's 24/7. And I just want the new manager to come in and, you know, I like what Martinez done. By getting, you know, asking how would they come in.
Yeah.
You know, getting the feel of what the club were about, asking the right questions, you know, so asking the Phil Royal, putting the winning sides up, you know, in big pitches in Finch Farm. So the mind of players are coming through and coming in. Look, this is what we're all about. Yeah. You know, this is where we want to strive to, where we want to be. So I'd love a manager to come in and just, you know, get to know us and get the fans going, but obviously got that name or the credibility to attract the players that we need in January and in the summer. And then hopefully in the following year, we're in Europe, that you've got the European nounce, you know.
Yeah.
You know, people have spoke about Burnley and Everton. They're two different clubs in my eyes.
Yeah, definitely.
And I feel that, you know, he's probably got a job for life at Burnley. And if he comes to Everton and does well for a couple of years, does he really think that the machinery might go, well, now we're in Europe, we're pushing, you know, off your path, and we want to bring someone else and take us to the next level again. So it's a gamble for him as well.
The pressure would be on him straight away, wouldn't it? Just because I don't think 100% of the fan base would be behind him because, as you said, is he the right guy?
If you think about manager, I know, like, there's obviously Ancelotti hasn't got a club, but, you know, we've got to be realistic here. Mm. Yeah, but ask the question, throw money at him.
Yeah, of course.
You know, there's nothing available for him. Throw money at him, someone's going to get him. And, you know, he's not going to stay long term, but he'll get a winning mentality of the club where to be at.
Yeah.
You know, it shows different levels in different clubs. You know, Bayern Munich, they were top of the league, but not playing the way they play as a club, so they sacked them.
Yeah.
You know, that's different in all around Europe. Zidane was winning everything 18 months ago, now he's under pressure. They're off. They're expecting. And our club needs to be, you know, we don't deserve the right to be like that yet, but we've got to start thinking that way.
Were you a little bit surprised that maybe Tuchel, the former Dortmund manager, hasn't been linked a little bit more with the job?
Yeah, it was. I think he's distanced himself from anything, hasn't he? So it's gone pretty quiet. But it's a gamble with the Premier League situation. Yeah. That would worry me, but you need these, where are these strikers that we're going to be bringing in? Because I think if you've got a high profile manager on the phone, it'd be very difficult for them to turn around and say no.
Yeah.
Speaking to lads when you go to the pub, you know, Benitez's name gets popped up about, I don't want him anywhere near us. You know, but he knows the Premier League, he's got the European now, so it's sort of him, but not him.
Yeah.
You know, so
the clone of him, that has nothing to do with
it. So, you know, somebody, yeah, you know what the Premier League's all about, and but then you can start building a team for the next 3 or 4 years. This season has been a nightmare, but it shouldn't be written off yet. We can still finish, you know, in that, but, you know, in a way, you don't really want to be in Europe again next year. I think it's sort of puts a downer on everyone, but we want to finish eighth. You know, we want to finish ninth. We still get that gap if we get a run of games going.
Yeah.
And that will attract players. Our next season, our next level is to go to where we wanted to be this season. We're pushing for the top six and the top four.
Yeah.
Push them as much as we can. You know, that we have to wait till next season that to happen now. But, you know, if you're finishing bottom half of the table, you're going to struggle to attract the players that we want. And it's just going to delay sort of where we want to be at. You know, it's just been very disappointing because it's been so positive, especially when the new guy come in, Shearer, and
the
positive talk about the ground. Yeah, we started buying a lot of players. There was money coming in. I'm singing songs about how much money we've got.
Yeah.
And, it was exciting times. And then just the way we started this season, it just put a bit of down, and we sort of pressed the pause button a little bit and probably gone backwards. So whoever comes in, I think, you know, the players, they can't be that poorly, but just our performance of being so poorly, it's been very disappointing. I think the lads need to take a lot more responsibility, go back to basics and remember, you know, what they needed to do to sort of keep the level up. And I just really feel that they're stuck in too many styles, from Martins to Koeman to say Unzi, sort of, we're not all on the same hinge sheet at the minute.
Do you feel that we need to send them back?
Even last season, you know, we had a team, but then it only takes one suspension, a couple of injuries, and you're like, and you realise how sort of fragile we are, and that's what I really hoped for this summer, was to have 22 players and they can play in every position, and you're causing sort of not problems. You're causing problems for the manager, but rivalry in training. So you know, if you're not on the, if you don't play well Saturday, mate, I'm playing.
Yeah.
You know, put that pressure on. But we've got so many players that have got. It doesn't matter how they play, they're going to be playing each week. So there's no one to come in and do a better job. And I just feel the back four, it's difficult. If you chopping and changing the back four, it is really important to have the same set of there. But there's been so many under par performances and mistakes. You know, Williams has been, you know, so many mistakes. So you can understand why they dropped him. And then Jags has come in and hasn't fulfilled his potential again. You know, he's struggled and Keane struggled. I think all three of them, they're making so many mistakes, especially the Watford game that was wound. I was sat in the park end with my brother that game, and yeah. I could see what Watford were doing after 2 minutes, and we never done anything to stop it. We played two sitting midfielders who you presume is to press the ball but also protect the ball, getting into the striker's feet. And the centre said the half of passing the ball, not through the air, on the ground, to the striker's feet, and they was turning Keane, he's turning Jags or William, you know, and where's the leadership? Why isn't anyone shouting?
Yeah.
The two legs of the 7 minutes, just stand here, stop that ball for us. You know, it's a simple decision that can stop how Watford were playing, and every build up from the full back to centre half, that's how they done it. And then we never learn because we went to Palace. And Zaha gets a chance to just pick the ball up, turn and run into the box and tap it in. Mm. And there's, you know, as a fullback here, we see like stop crosses, that's your job. But sometimes the build up play, you just can't stop the cross. And the centre half needs to acknowledge, well, we're not going to stop that cross. So where's my man? Yeah. Not one of them look for the man, they're all ball watching. Mm. And he peels off and taps it in. And that's not young kids. No. You know, that's what are supposedly two England internationals.
Yeah.
And it's basic stuff, and it's stuff that if they were talking of being the leaders that they're supposed to be, that situation wouldn't have even happened. It would have been a ball by Paz being passed backwards or sideways.
Yeah.
So it's little things like that are not getting sort of stamped on. And I said it in the column today. If I was in the video room and I was Keen or Jagiel, I'd be embarrassed watching that.
Yeah.
You know, because I can know I'd know what to say by just going, just step to the right, where we're sniding and where we're gay, to stop that ball. You know, I know they're chasing the ball down a lot, but then that's their job. You know, it's a basic thing of just do your job first, because we're struggling. We need to sort of be compact together, help each other out, and then as the game gets on, hopefully get a bit of rhythm and start creating a few chances.
Yeah.
But we're sort of, there's no partnership at the minute, there's no fluency, there's no sort of identity at the minute. I feel that's probably because of the chop and change of managers, but the senior players know that. You know, and they know what's going on, and they need to sort of stand up and go, you know, and have a bit more pride about themselves. You can see they're trying.
Level, isn't it?
And they're trying. You know, you can see, but it's like they're trying, but we're 2 yards too late because they're not set up properly. We're not being brave enough off the back. We're far too deep at the back, and we're making it too difficult for our midfielders to get any pressure on.
Yeah.
So if you just play that extra 5 yards further forward, you know, Pickford, you know, he's had a fantastic season. He's been probably our best player, but he's letting too many goals, and because of the way we're defending, we're playing far too deep. So anything that goes in behind our defence, it's basically a goal or a shot on goal. So he's having a busier time. If you play for like 5 yards further forward, push the midfielder tighter and get in people's faces and don't let them settle, which I think obviously we're trying to get them to do. But as the game goes on, we just seem to sort of go back into our old ways again, whether it's the accumulating ways. And I can just see some players are playing one style and one playing the other. And who we need to bring in, you know, every player's going to start that new reaction is going to happen.
Yeah.
And I feel if you do get a long-term manager in now, it will be, you know, going to be a bit of a gamble for us. But I think it would be better because the players know that he's going to be the manager for at least the next 2 years. So they need to prove to him that they want to be on that pitch.
Yeah.
And if they're not, sorry, shut off, go.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to moan about it or go to the press every time you're international duty and have a moan, do you want.
We know about that.
Yeah, you know, I don't understand why they did, because you know, Kevin Morelos comes in and scores 15 goals a season. I go, fair enough.
Yeah.
No, his job was to create chances and score. He hasn't done it. How many chances have been given over the last few years? He's got talent. That boy's got really talent, but he only shows it in parts. Mm. And then he goes away to Belgium and starts his mouth off. And he hasn't done nothing. I don't think he scored 10 goals for us in one season.
No, that's a great point.
It's very poor. It's very, like, at the end of the day, Koeman brought players in because he gave Ross Barkley a lot of stress over that productivity, that word he loves saying.
Yeah, he did.
But we've got worse. You know, we've got, and we're not creating any more than we were last season. So when they're out of the team, when they come in, they've got to make an impact. You know, Luckman started the weekend. I felt sorry for him because he shows glimpses, but again, it's no set of sides. You're on your own,
yeah,
doing your own little thing. So I really, hopefully, we can just get a settled team and go, look, we're just going to play this way. Let's be brave and be strong and get at them and get a bit of fluency going, because I think the chopping changes from no wingers, then we're all playing two wingers. It's we don't really know what's going on from one week to the next, and it's just really disappointing, frustrating what's happened this season. But the players just need to take a bit more responsibility. So I mean, no matter who it is, but I really think if they get a long term one, it will be better. Because if they get a short term one, I don't say Allardyce, as we spoke about before, and Morelos, to say not involved and on the bench or out the squad, he's just going to go, well, I'm going to outlast you, so I'm not going to bother trying.
Yeah.
I'll wait till the summer.
I mean,
but then there might be a game that we probably need Morelos to come in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Hopefully we don't go short. It doesn't look like we're going to go short term now, but there was a scare a few weeks ago that we were looking that way. So, if Marco Silva comes in, it's going to be a gamble, because we don't know what he's going to be able to do if he gets us up to that league. But we've done well at Watford and he's had his best call, but I haven't another step up again.
Was the appeal ever there for you to get involved in the coaching side of things?
No, it wasn't really. I should have really done them when I was injured. When I had a bit of time on my hands, I should have got involved and done it a little bit, but I always thought it wasn't really me. I wish I could rather go from nothing to manager, which is never going to work. You've got to earn your stars and stripes, I suppose, but I would never be a coach. I'd always, even being a player, I couldn't. It's a tough job. I went to do my badge, it only lasted 3 days. I had to come over. That component one of the component two and put it into a phase of play. I went, what have you just spoke to me about? What? I've got to explain it to other people. I'm going to be cheating them and myself.
Yeah.
I'd love to be a number three in a changing room. Going round, I'm more of a one-to-one person, I think. I was like that as a player.
Yeah.
I wasn't good sort of stand up and talking in front of a lot of lads or whatever, but one-to-one, I was always sort of putting little pointers in there, into the young kids, even to the senior players, just go around and to each one. So I would like to do that possibly in the future, but you need your badges still to do that. So it's probably an avenue I'd never sort of go down.
I feel like we're running out of time a little bit, but I just want to give an honourable mention to Manchester City, because I know they've probably got Am I right in saying your older son Michael, does he support Manchester City?
He's a little mank. Well, everyone said that's because he started going to game a lot more. He was obviously too young when I was at Everton and Rangers, BSV and stuff, and I was obviously City, obviously going to game with my family and stuff, and so we started. Well, he's still an Everton fan. He had the season ticket, so he's still going to the Everton game. But then everyone said, well, he only supports him because he played there. I went, no, he never. He said he started supporting him when I left. I think he followed the money. I think it was the signing of like Rubinho or Aguero.
It was an exciting
got him a little bit.
For him?
Yeah, so I gave him some stick, but he's still got there's a toffee in there somewhere, but I failed as a father, not the keeping of the royal bloke.
I wanted to ask you, if you could go back to, when was it? I think it was April 97 when you made your debut, and redo your whole career again, would you? And if so, would you change anything? Would you live it all again?
No. Yeah, you would. It was a dream come true.
Yeah.
You know, my dream was to obviously captain Everton in England. That was a kid's dream. I never managed to sort of do that, but I got close. You know, yeah. I played for my boyhood team. You know, loved to got me. You know, you always wanted to have a testimonial. You know, that was you wanted to have, back then it was a big thing, wasn't it? To play for your club and playing for Everton for 10 years was always something I've always wanted to do. And it was so close to returning a few times, but it just never seemed to happen. So I'm disappointed about, but I wouldn't change anything really. There's no sort of regrets anything. It happens. I was lucky enough to play football, the job that every boy wants to do. And so in that sense, now you live it all over again, and probably twice as much.
Fantastic. So thank you very much.
Yeah, no worries. No problem, mate. No problem.
And enjoy the rest of your day anyway, and I'll give you a shout over Twitter when it goes up.
Right, spot on. All right, thanks very much.
Take care. Thank you.
Cheers, mate. Take care. Bye.
It was a genuine treat to listen to some of Bawley's stories there. Thanks to Bawley and indeed you, the listener, for tuning in. If you've listened via YouTube, please like and subscribe to Toffee Blues page. If you have any stories about Bawley, leave them in the comments below. If you were listening via podcast, please do leave a rating, because trust me, we need them. Until next time, take care. Goodbye.